Welcome in, heroic husbands from around the planet, to a new episode of the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. This is the one podcast where the aim of every single word and expression is to support each and every single one of you sacred husbands around the planet to become the marriage transforming heroes of your relationship. Today, I am super pumped and excited to let you all know that we have collectively together broken through the 400 listeners per week barrier. This is part of an amazing journey that I am seeing unfolding, and I appreciate every single one of you listening in, those of you guys that have been following all the way along, and all of those that are coming as newbies today and onwards. I'm so appreciative of you all for your support and your attention and your tuning in along the journey. It's 2027. By the end of 2027, my impossible goal is to hit 10 million listeners per week. It's a true impossible goal, in the sense of, it's like, I have no idea how to make that possible. All I know is I'm fueling every single cell in my nervous system to hit that goal, because, you know, the mantra of this movement is better husbands today, better world tomorrow. I believe that to the core of my being, and you know, this is my humble part, but by invitation, I can't do it alone. I have an absolute need. This movement is not about me, it's about every single one of you amazing men listening in, doing the work, just creating that sacred space where you place your attention upon the ideas that are put forward in this, to marinate your nervous system into a new, more awakened, constructive paradigm of being able to show up as heroic husbands in ways that your beautiful queens can feel you, can trust you, can love you, can appreciate you, can challenge you, can give you feedback, and you're just getting stronger and more confident and more competent and more in your power with every single challenge that your woman and life puts in front of you. That's the name of the game. That's how you become the marriage transforming hero of your relationship. In that whole essence, and off the back of excitement of like more and more of you guys listening in, the movement is unstoppable, and I have an unstoppable golden key to gift you all today. The title, The Golden Key to Ending Sanity Bashing Arguments Forever. I mean, just touching base with you, you know, how do you approach conflict in your marriage? How do you approach those nitty-gritty conversations that you know you need to have? You know you need to speak to your woman about the in-laws, the outlaws. You know there's awkward conversations to be had about finances. You know that whatever is happening in the bedroom or not happening in the bedroom, but it's just, there are always these conflicting conversations where you end up so often avoiding. I know myself, for years I had no idea how to go about consciously conversing with my queen in a way that, you know, it's like that would bring to a happy, harmonious result for both of us. I did not know how to do that, and yeah, it nearly drove my marriage over the cliff. Really, fundamentally, it has been a lack of communication skills that nearly buried my marriage for forevermore. I've come back from that cliff edge, you know, with deep work. I'm very grateful for everything I've learned along the way, all the experiences I've had, the grace, forgiveness from my beautiful queen, learning tons, you know, from teachers, mentors, men's work, and I give gratitude for all of that to come to this point here. But I do know that this is a major issue. It might be the issue. It's up there in the top one, like, you know, one or two issues in marriage for most men. You might put deep sexual intimacy as another issue. Communication is, it's hanging around there in the top three for most men. In that regard, as always, you know, if when you reflect upon, you know, how are your communication skills, are there times or often, like, do you avoid conflict, or when conflicting emotional circumstances and conversations come up, do you end up battered and bruised the far side? And maybe I'm talking about emotionally, maybe. I'm hoping not, but maybe there's a physical battering and bruising. We'll assume that that is not the case. But, you know, they can be psychologically and emotionally bruising, these conversations. We're going to talk to the core of that and the golden key. The golden key is, I came upon this golden key metaphor this morning. I'd been using the metaphor previously, but it came forward. A guy that I co-lead a men's group with, in conversation with him after the meetings, we do a debrief of the men's work that we were doing in a meeting every single time, but we end up geeking out and talking about, a lot of times it's relationships, conscious communication, how it applies to men's work, but also to our deep intimate relationships, etc. And this metaphor came true spontaneously as I was speaking with this guy, you know, just giving him some what I hope is useful guidance and feedback on how he's showing up in his marriage. And the metaphor is a pilot navigating through the skies in, I'm going to say, his airplane for use of it. Of course, it can be her, equality, all the rest. There's thousands, millions of powerful, amazing women in the skies. I'm going to use the word him because he is representing you and I, powerful, well-intentioned husbands. The metaphor is, you know, there's a macro part to the metaphor in relationship, in marriage, how you navigate the skies as a pilot is the same as how you navigate like a long distance flight. The macro part of the metaphor, which I'd begin with first, albeit I'm going to bring it into the micro relevance of it. The macro level relevance of this metaphor, which is what naturally came up in conversation earlier on this morning before the micro part became really clear and how significant it can serve you gain clarity in how you navigate conflict and relationship. The macro part, let's just picture, you know, on a map, if you can like visualize as you're driving along, jogging, walking, sitting, visualize in your mind, you know, the map of the globe. And you have, let's say we put Paris one side, where the plane takes off from Paris, and the plane must go across the Atlantic over to New York. So it's quite a long distance trip. Now, I remember reading this several years ago first, and it's very interesting. You know, it's the author was making the point that he was asking the question, it's like, you know, what is the course that a pilot tracks out going from one destination to the next? And on a map, like very often you'll visualize, if you put it on a map, if you had a flat map in front of you and you're like, oh, can you map out the journey from Paris to New York, most people unquestioningly will just pop down, they'll put a ruler down on the page and like get the center of Paris on the map, the center of New York, and they'll draw a straight line. And in many senses, you know, without getting into the details too much, of course, that's sort of like the way you'd map it out. Yet, on a level of reality, the pilot is making many adjustments the whole way across. Depending on the weather he meets, the winds, the direction, I'm quite sure if there was a pilot here, here would be able to give way more details, thermals, updrafts, all the different variables about that makes all of these micro adjustments in the direction of the plane meander across the horizon. The ultimate destination that he is trying to progressively point the plane towards is the center of whatever the runway is, of course, in New York. But there's a meandering path. So the destination is New York. This metaphor really works because from a macro perspective, very often we can get, and it might be more especially early in the early days of marriage, you know, where there's new experiences hitting you left, right, and center, the newness of engagement, the newness of marriage, the newness of where you live together, which very often can involve which country, which continent, can be very complicated. And I had that in relationship with my beautiful woman. She's from Italy, I'm from Ireland. Where you're going to work, where are you both going to work, and then where are you going to live, you know, to bring into harmony where both of you work, etc. Will both of you work? There's a ton of decisions, like whole life decisions, that can bring a massive amount of stress. The wisdom over time from a macro level is when you have a vision, an unstoppable vision, like rooted into your nervous system, that no matter what comes upon your path in the present day tense, tomorrow, the next day, 10 years time, 30 years time, you're going to be together. Loving life, loving each other, deeply connected. It does not matter. That's the unquestionable, non-negotiable destination. It gives you this grounded sense of calm in facing whatever is the temporary situation that your wife suddenly brings to you. It's like, hey, I'm thinking of moving country. Like, I don't want to live here anymore. Or, hey, you know, I don't want to work and do this job anymore. You could, like, be really depending on a second income at that point, and she just puts this spanner in the works. Whatever it is, like, I want to have a new kid. Whatever the spanner in the works is, when, like the pilot in the jet airplane, you have, well, hey, I know exactly where I need to get to eventually, and I will make micro adjustments or major adjustments. I will, you know, everything in my nervous system is aimed at that destination. I'm not going to back off that destination, and I'll make whatever adjustments are right and appropriate to each moment of the journey. But you're not in any state of panic. You're going to get there. There's a level of assurance and certainty. This is like a macro elder approach in marriage that in and of itself can, as an attitude, can bring that sense of calm and safety that your woman can feel into and go, wow, I can bring any idea to this amazing man in front of me. And he doesn't, which is, I know I've done it for like well over a decade, those infamous or famous first 12 years that I continually refer to in these episodes, where, you know, and boy, you know, my queen, she brought so many new, what I thought were crazy ideas that my nervous system did not know how to contend, did not know how to expand to make that happen. I found it so ultra challenging that I ended up wrangling with her and sort of like arguing with her and trying to box her, trying to be the devil's advocate, trying to fix the situation. And when my nervous system couldn't find a fix immediately, I'd end up feeling a deep shame in myself, but I ended up unwillingly snuffing out her candle very often, you know, trying to take the heat out of her argument. And unwittingly, yeah, that was actually very traumatizing for my beautiful queen. Yet looking back, you know, and definitely now speaking with hundreds of guys in deep long-term relationship and marriage around the world, it's a very common experience that our wives are going through with us. So I just want to bring you first and foremost into the macro level part of this metaphor. Be like the pilot that no matter what you're coming upon in each part of the journey, your nervous system, and I put the responsibility with you, the masculine core in a relationship, you know, there's a response ability. There's your ability to respond to practicing whatever is necessary to serve, love, flourishing in your relationship. You know, it's a masculine core responsibility to structure the relationship, to structure the conversation, to do whatever training is necessary to align your nervous system to be present in the moment. This is all your sacred masculine part in this beautiful dynamic dance with your feminine, with your goddess, your beautiful queen. This is part of your responsibility. You know, it's like your ability to respond in an empowering way. So when you engender and like visualize, journal, feed, you know, in a daily way, this unstoppable vision that you just know you're going to be together, is you're just like, you're connected. That will help you be radically calm and collected and decisive in the moment-to-moment challenges of what comes up in a way that you're not gonna panic. You'll never hit the panic button. A great pilot will not hit the panic button when he's, you know, 20 minutes into a flight across the ocean and he hits some turbulence. He's going to be like, okay, how do I navigate this? Check whatever the radar things is. Like, do I have to go straight through it, battle it out, you know, or can I take a little detour up, under, over, whatever. I don't know what pilots do in the skies. No, you're going to remain calm. A great pilot will remain calm and, you know, just prioritize and execute along the way and get everybody to that destination. So that's the macro part. Be like that pilot. Hold your destination clearly in your nervous system and just calmly and with great confidence and certainty execute the adjustments needed. The second part of where this metaphor like really got me this morning, and it was like, wow, you know, it's like so potent, the how, like any great metaphor, it just communicates beyond the words. I could give you, like, you could read a book about deep intimate communications. Lord knows I've read tons of them, thousands of pages, but it's like a great metaphor just lands you there. Your intelligence gets it. And that metaphor, from a micro perspective, it's the same pilot and the big jet airliner. It's coming into landing. And imagine a pilot now coming into landing. I don't know if you've ever done this. I've been fascinated. I've cut YouTube from my phone because I think certain times I was. I had to hold myself to account because I'd end up like finding these cool videos, and before I know it, like, I was like there 15 or 20 minutes looking at cool shit that had nothing to do with what I was intending to do in that given moment, etc., etc., etc. But part of some of those videos were the odd time it would come up where these pilots would come into landing. You might have experienced this actually live in person, so you'll have like a really dramatic experiential sort of know-how of what this feels like as a passenger. But you'll see these pilots come into landing, and, you know, on some certain airports, there can be some airports are quite famous for having crosswinds, really strong crosswinds, and where you see the plane coming into landing, coming in, and it might be sort of from, you know, maybe a kilometer out, it seems quite lined up, but the lower it gets to the ground, and especially in some of the videos I've seen, it's like the last, you know, the last, it could be just a couple of hundred meters before it comes in, you'll see the pilot just, I don't know what the technical terms is, but like just puts the nose of the plane into the wind. So effectively, just the last couple of hundred meters is really spectacular looking, really risky looking. It's like, you know, you'd be trembling if you're on that plane. But it's like, it's the full side of the plane is facing. There's people sitting on that plane looking out going, I shouldn't be seeing this angle of the runway. I should not be looking. This is the angle that the pilot should be seeing the runway at. So it's like the side of the plane is just coming into landing, like almost like at a 90 degree angle or like a 70 degree angle. And then the very last second, the pilot does the last nanosec change and the plane drops down, hits the runway, and everybody is safe. Now, how the main question here is, What's the most important thing that the pilot must do with his attention coming into landing when he's facing, stormy conditions or a severe crosswind like this? It's really a life and death situation, so there's no margin for error. What is the most important place that the pilot must place his attention on to successfully bring the plane home and have everybody feel safe? The single one place that the pilot exclusively focuses his attention is on the runway. This might seem really, really obvious, but the importance of it metaphorically will come to the surface. The pilot and every single visual on a big international airport, the runways, if you look at them, if you see them depicted in films or coming into landing at night, there's massive lights either side of the runway to bring the clearest attentional stimuli of the pilot's nervous system off. That's where you're locking in. If there's chaos, if there's fog, if there's whatever, every single given support is given to the pilot to trigger his attention to focus on the runway. Because when you're going through shitty weather, when the pilot is going through the winds, and there's an absolute challenge to the max of his skill set, his piloting flying skill set to bring it into landing. When his mind is focused on the runway, every single skill set available to him, consciously and subconsciously, all the practice habitual movements and reactions and instincts as a pilot, by focusing on the runway, everything naturally happens at the right time, right moment, right nanosecond reactivity to bring the plane home. It's on autopilot in a sense, purely because he's focusing like that. This works also for supercars. I've heard it was Tony Robbins talking about it first. I had another, it was Rich Litwin is a coach that would be sort of mentors me, not directly, but through emails. Rich was talking about he went to a high-level Porsche driving school. So it's like these supercars, and part of it again was when the tutor was bringing Rich through corners to the point at which he was like pushing the car to the limit that the car would spin. But then it was sort of backtracking, going, okay, well, what was happening when the car was spinning was Rich was looking away from where he was meant to be going. Tony Robbins with the exact same reflection back, where both the instructors for both of the guys during their sports car training was just keep looking in the direction of where you want the car to go. And the idea was your whole nervous system will naturally do the right thing, right moment, without any instruction. It will just steer the car and correct course to bring you there. It's like it's this natural phenomenon. My own beautiful queen, Matilda, teaching horse riding. It's the exact same teaching on horses. She's time and time again, it's like she would be like calling out to her students. It's like just face, point your eyes and head, look towards the fence, and naturally the horse would start going towards it. When, these kids, these, well, sometimes they're adults, were having difficulties where they couldn't get the horse to go where they wanted, in there invariably she's like, look at what's happening every single time is the horse is pulling one way and your head goes further that way. So then it just is like this negative feedback loop. The horse goes more and more off line where you're looking. Whereas when you look towards where you want to go, the horse, you'll be able to bring the horse back. All of this, I'm just giving the natural examples. There's the pilot metaphor ultimately in this session. But there's the car metaphor, and then in the natural world, it's like the riding a horse metaphor. They all point to one thing, one like it's a human behavioral phenomenon that's true. I would say it's just it, there's a truth. It's like there's this universal human truth that where you focus on is where you will end up. So this sounds like really ridiculous. A lot of you will be like, yeah, well, that's bloody obvious. The importance in relationship will come very, very soonly. But I want to just bake in this absolute, like, it's a fact. Where you focus on is where you will end up going. Where your attention is focusing on is where you will end up going. It's like natural law, law of attraction, psychological law, behavioral studied law. That's what happens. So therefore, if that's what happens, it's absolutely essential that you become consciously aware of where you're focusing in certain moments to create the results you want. Now, when it comes to relationships, you know, where do we focus when we're in conflict? Let me backtrack just one second. There's one thing coming up that's important. Just the pilot coming into landing. The pilot coming into landing in the storm or with the severe crosswind. There's one off, like, what's key about his mindset and his focus in those moments is he's not allowing any of his mind focus on anything, making anything personal with the storm. He's not giving out about the storm. He's not going like cursing the weather, cursing the shitty report that he got back, you know, at the base airport, you know, like it got it totally correct. He's not cursing the, what do you call it? Why is the word not coming to me? You know, that building around airports, air traffic control. He's not cursing air traffic control because they didn't report, like, you know, the coming into landing report, I don't know, 5 minutes out, 5 miles out. They got it wrong. They didn't tell him right. He's not cursing that. All his attention is on getting down onto the strip. He has a decision to make. To land or to abort the landing attempt. Again, this will link in powerfully with you in conflict, in relationship. So bear with me. We're slowing down to speed up here consciously. If he makes the decision to land, the judgment is built off two things. It's like he has an adequate skill set to deal with a storm, and he has judged that the storm is safe enough. He can meet the challenge. If he aborts landing, well, then the aborting the landing, we'll assume it's a momentary, he's creating a momentary space and time to retake, well, not take off, but like abort the landing, circle around the airport for a few minutes, and the whole purpose of that is to find, you know, that 30-second, 1-minute window in time where the wind dies, keeping an eye on the windsock, whatever. So it's like just finding that window of time where he can do it safely at the earliest available window. So this becomes very apparent in relationships and how we navigate conflict. Jumping on, it's like the importance of where you focus. Now the question that I want you to ask yourselves is, when you experience heart closure, what do you focus on classically? And by heart closure, I mean, it's those shitty moments when you're in relationship with your woman. Yeah, when do you experience heart closure in conflict with your woman? What do you focus on? It's that heart closure. It's like you tense up. There's blame, there's shame in your thinking. You're focusing on where she's wrong, you know. And part of that is spontaneity. You know, the most common thing, what do you focus on? Are you focusing your attention on answering the question, who's right and who's wrong? Or are you focusing your attention exclusively on creating connection as the primary aim? So is it focusing mentally and verbally on who's right and wrong, or on creating connection as a primary aim? 99.99% of husbands will immediately say, it's like, hey, man, oh, Jesus, don't say, it's like, it's right and wrong. I mean, in those moments of heart closure, as like the vast majority of guys listening in, I would say bar none. And if some of you have, oh no, like I don't experience, I'm all in on connection. It's like I would actually genuinely question if you were in a room and I was doing like a public teaching here, I would challenge you directly. It's like, well, why are you at this meeting? Why have you felt need to listen into this? Because if you have like the perfect high standards capacity to navigate conflict, never ever going to right and wrong, and you're constantly, focusing on connection, there's not much for you to benefit from here. You're probably ahead of me. You're probably the lead learner of me, because I still find this a challenge to remain so disciplined to keep in the zone on this. The vast majority of guys listening in would be like, man, it's fucking right or wrong thinking. That's like my mental thing is, there's a struggle to listen to my woman because it's like when she's speaking, I'm so triggered. My mind is just fucking like stripping her to pieces. It's like just finding how I'm right. Like you would even consciously, if we were in a men's group, a lot of guys would laugh, go, yeah, you're just like selectively attending to the pieces of the evidence of the jigsaw in front of you to make yourself right and her wrong. Like that's where conflict comes. Now, when that happens and your subconscious intentional focus is on right or wrong, think about that right or wrong as like there's the option of landing on the runway of connection or landing on the runway of right and wrong. Now, where this gets complex, and well, it's complex in conflict, but I want to bring simplicity for you here, is the problem with like trying to get both of you, when you're focusing on right and wrong, what you're trying to do energetically with your woman in that moment is you're trying to sort of coerce her, manipulate her, convince her to agree that she's wrong and you're right, and you're like, you're gonna land on that runway over there, which is like the name of that runway is Mark is right and Matilda's wrong. In my relationship, it's like whatever your name is, Tommy and Patricia is your wife's name. You're trying to face the plane and convince with enough energy and enough argument and enough slagging and I love stonewalling. You're trying to convince Patricia. Who did I say? Tommy, Patricia. I'm losing the names here. Spontaneous names. Screwing me up. Anyway, Tommy is trying to convince Patricia to go, yes, honey, I will land on the Tommy is right, Patricia is wrong landing patch. She isn't going to do that. Why? Because her nervous system, the more you come from a right and wrong position within yourself, which she is infinitely unsafe in that moment, your woman is not going to do. And if she does, she'll do it grudgingly. She'll only do it because you shouted loud enough, you got stubborn enough, you got maybe aggressive enough to the point at which she just backed off. Or you spoke about it to the point at which, it's like the conversation started at 12 o'clock on the pillow. Both of you too tired, and it ended at like 3:30 in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, and it was like she was just too exhausted, or you were too exhausted. You end up like just agreeing to it, but like with you just make up, there's some make up sex, insincere sorries and apologies, exhaustion, and it just becomes this conflict avoidant. It breeds conflict avoidance, which in tune creates more conflict. Nobody, not yourself nor your wife, wants to land on the other person's runway. Because if you land in the argument on her runway, it's like, oh, tail between the legs, fucking them, like I'm wrong, she's right, etc. This right and wrong, subconscious, intentional focus, both sides, connection doesn't come there. And when connection comes, it's a pretty shitty feeling experience. And it's at the end of a long, exhausting battle between both of you. Or if it ends super quick, it's because one of you walked out the door or it just ended in intense drama. It can be sort of short as well, but they're intense and shitty. and they keep a pattern of shitty conflict and horrible experiences coming up, not knowing how to do conflict correctly. It's not what you want to do. The first connection priority, as your primary priority, like the pilot coming into landing, it does not matter what the wind throws at him, which the wind is like, the wind or the storm is representing, in this metaphor, your wife, her irrationality, her unapologetic unpredictability. The feminine shitstorm, the emotional core of your woman, is by nature unpredictable. It's like, you know, it's the feminine is nature, the feminine is the storm. This the classic metaphor that represents the feminine. The pilot doesn't go against the storm. The pilot doesn't stay looking at the windsock, looking at the clouds and going, oh, I'm trying to get away from the storm. No, it would make no sense. If he was focusing at looking at the eye of the storm, he'd crash the plane. He focuses his attention on the runway. And the runway is connection. So again, you know, the metaphor, what I'm encouraging you slowly but surely here is to take on the metaphor and like really reflect upon it. You know, your next time and in conflict, and the conflict does come, part of a beautiful, intense, passionate, expansive relationship between a powerful man and a powerful woman, conflict will come when you butt heads and there's going to be two different perspectives. It will happen. You want it to happen. I mean, it's a sign that you're both alive. You're both have your chips on the table and you're willing to engage. So it's a good sign in many senses. Like the tragedy of all tragedies for relationships is when indifference is met with indifference. It's like you've both thrown in the towel. You're only staying together because there's kids, because you've got this life together. You've got the pensions. You know, you go on some fucking holidays and eat some rich food and get drunk a couple of times. And if you fuck a couple of times along the way, all well and good. It's a bonus. I mean, you don't want to get to the level of indifferences. So again, I'm just baking in some, you know, positive reframing. Some of you listening in could be like, man, there's fucking arguments all the time. Arguments all the time means that both of you are still passionately in love and there's a lot of hope and there's a lot of desire for something better. It's actually a good sign. Okay, the focus, like the pilot, my encouragement is that you reframe now as you're listening in, slowly but surely, you start reframing what you will focus on the next time you enter, the next time a spontaneous conflict situation happens in conversation with your woman. The subconscious intentional focus on right and wrong, I want to be black and white. It does not work. Again, I've been in conversation with guys live. This is podcast style, so I can't get the nods of the heads in the room. But I've been in enough men's circles, you know, public chats with guys one-on-one, in group, etc., to know every guy gets. It's like when you get into that right and wrong thing mentally and verbally, I mean, it just doesn't end well. It's just an exhaustive, horrible process that breeds more bitterness and resentment, and yeah, it's just not very healing. It's a predictable system to bring more conflict. So it doesn't work unless, of course, I asterisk that, unless you're a struggle junkie, you love fucking drama, you're addicted to drama, that's all you've ever known in your childhood, so you're like, I'm good. I'm just saying, from a trauma-informed perspective, it doesn't make sense. But if you're good and you're like, man, I just love the struggle. I love the shit. I love that shitty feeling of conflict. I love that shitty feeling of throwing shit our way. She throws shit my way. And a bit of cheap makeup sex. If you're happy with that, you don't need to listen to any more. You're happy. You've made your decision. However, if you are listening in because you truly intend to become the marriage transforming force, the hero of your relationship, if you intend to become the husband she eventually and rapidly, if you implement this type of focus in your conflict preparations, you will be a husband she will be bragging about really, really soon, well, then there's no option but change your paradigm from the right and wrong subconscious intentional focus to when you find yourself in heart closure, your only exclusive focus is on a vision of both of you guys being connected as soon as possible. You know, it's life and death immediately, with immediate results for the pilot and for every passenger on board. Because like if he loses concentration on the right runway, I mean, the plane crashes, everybody dies. We get lulled into, this is just a side, but I really want to bake this in. And please, there's sometimes, like every part of these conversations are really important, but please lean in on this part. The worst mistake that we make as husbands, I put my hand up, my marriage nearly ended, but I see this everywhere. The worst mistake we make in judgment as husbands is we don't give any heed, credence to the long-term life and death effects on our marriage. We do the same shit, different day approach to conflict. We do the right, wrong sort of bullshitty, you know, roundabout syndrome. It's just the same old shit, same day, different argument, same results. We keep showing up the same way, expecting new results and bitching about our marriage, about our woman. You know, as we walk in off into the sunset, expecting that she'll just remain with us. And then we're like, oh, man, and we burst into tears the day that the divorce papers come, or, you know, the day when she's finally just frozen you out intimately. She's like, enough. I don't fucking want any more of you. Subconsciously, her body just doesn't want you, doesn't yearn for you anymore. The light has gone out in her eyes. Her eyes, when she looked at you when you met first, that used to, like, her eyes and face and body used to light up in your presence. Now it's just spent. It's like the light switch is off. If she's physically there, it's just because she has not got the courage to move on, or you have some codependent shitty dynamic that's keeping her there. But she's not there. She's dead. We don't give credence to that being an inevitability if we just show up in the same shit, different day way. So I'm like just inviting you to wake up to this reality. You know, statistically, 50%, I think roughly, cross-culturally, 50% of marriages end in divorce. Of the marriages that remain, 95% of the marriages that remain, so it's like 95% of all marriages, you're either in divorce or you're in this other bracket, which is like living unhappily together ever after. It's not a place you want to live. Really, it's not a place you want to live. So that built-in connection is the number one focus. So you find yourself in heart closure. Part of this, I've done this before, is like you've got to get aware of what heart closure looks like for you and set an if-then around it. If I become aware I'm in heart closure, you know, and you'll notice, you know, it's like you start complaining, you're blaming, maybe you're raising your voice. There's no stillness in the conversation. It's reactive talking. It's like insult to insult to react, reaction to reaction to reaction. It's like, or you could be stonewalling, doing the opposite. You're in heart closure, you're stonewalling, you're just going silent. She's like asking you questions and you're just there stubbornly staying silent. Your eyes are everywhere but looking at your woman. And if they do look at your woman, they're hard. They're like, there's a predator look, but not that nice sexual predator look. It's a predator look like, I'm fucking looking at you, but I'm disgusted. Your posture is tight and hard and closed, and your emotional state is reactive. It's unconscious. It's like there's all these shitty feelings inside of you festering away, and they're feeding the story of your thoughts in a moment of blame and shame and, again, right and wrong. So you just touch base with that. You know, I want you all to reflect always. This is not a passive listening experience, because when I invite you in like this, if you're new to this, like I know guys that have been following long term, they like this part, because in the self-reflective invitations where I invite you to just answer a question or reflect in the moment, that's the bit where your nervous system starts churning up something that's really useful for you. You know, are you becoming aware of like your unique signature of heart closure when you go into a tailspin and you start closing down to connection with your woman? If you become, going forward from this, if you become aware that you are dropping into heart closure, whatever your unique way of that those storm clouds come over you, then my invitation is, then you just become aware, I'm in heart closure. Okay, I'm going to focus all my attention on creating connection with my woman. You become like the pilot. It's like, I'm in the storm. The pilot becomes aware he's in the storm. Might have had the reports out the way, might have come unexpectedly all of a sudden. When the pilot is in the storm, it's go time. And it's go time on acute focus on the runway and doing everything. Keep the focus on that. So everything naturally within his nervous system optimizes all the skill set and the reactions and the impulses to bring the plane there. When you focus incessantly on your runway being connection, it's like you just go, okay, you lock in. Within 2 or 3 minutes time, she's going to be in my arms. She's going to be smiling. There's going to be understanding and connection and softness. You know, there's going to be love. And from there, you can sort out the argument. From there, you can, you know, you've created the foundation for the disagreement to unfold. And so many times, and I think every guy would agree, if you're in the room, a lot of guys would agree, so many times is this petty little point of principle sort of bullshit that's behind the whole right-wrong thing. Ultimately, and I've spoken to this before from a trauma-informed perspective, when we drop into heart closure, 99.9% of the times, it's a hurting, wounded, unhealed, unhealed part of our 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old inner child that is reacting so much. So it's like, it's the hurting subconscious mind of us as a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old looking on at dynamics between our mom or dad or like stepmom, dad, whatever, whoever were the people that predominantly modeled deep intimate relating. It's our subconscious wounds that get triggered so severely that brings about this sudden revealing of this immense heart closure of disgust, of upset, of a fear of abandonment, of not feeling we're being respected by our woman, etc., etc., etc. That's what brings us into this reactive subconscious intentional focus on right and wrong. It's not the 35-year-old in us, 45, 55, 65-year-old, you know, powerful adult man with worldly experience has navigated amazing. You've probably all navigated and created amazing, powerful, beautiful experiences as adult men in business, in sporting endeavors, I don't know, making your home, etc., etc. But we get so small-minded in those moments of closure. Why the focus needs to be on connection exclusively, like the pilot, is it's life and death in that moment. Because my question to you, if you're getting into your own intuitive feel of what heart closure is for you, maybe the word argumentative, when you get argumentative, could be a word that you'd resonate with more. I like heart closure because it speaks to the energetic of it. When you get this, you'll all have your intuitive feel about what that version looks like for you. My question to you is this. Have you ever spoken with your woman from your version of heart closure and had her look at you, open her heart, soften in her body, express undying love for you and go, hey, honey, you're so right. You know, take me sexually, take me to the bedroom. It's like, I'm your woman, you're my king, you know, let's fuck. or, you know, just conversationally. It might be straight to the bedroom, but it's like, hey, you know, alas, I feel your wisdom and your rightness, O King. Never in the history of humanity, when any man has spoken, and the opposite is true from a woman, but there's a masculine polarity perspective. First and foremost, I'm talking with you guys, your powerful husbands listening in. So I'm focusing your minds and intentionality on your 100%. Your woman has her 100%, but there's a sacred part here, a reminder of the fundamentals of masculine and feminine. Like when you practice conscious polarity in your relationships, which if you want, whether you use those words or not, it's like there's conscious practices that work in relationships predominantly. The masculine, the main masculine role in deep intimate relationship is embodying consciousness, being present. And being present is finding this still point inside, like the pilot, that doesn't get upset about anything in the environment, doesn't get overwhelmed by fear and unwittingly focuses on the lightning and the storm clouds and the rain and going, oh my God, that looks so dreadful in his mind, or verbally screaming that. I'm just laughing. Can you imagine if you heard, you know, when the captain sometimes comes on the intercom in the airplane, can you imagine if unwittingly during like coming into landing, all you heard was the captain going, oh fuck, did you ever see such fucking storm clouds? How am I going to fucking do this? Fuck you, storm clouds. Why me? You know, and then it went silent. Would you trust that pilot? No. But here's the thing. We have that version that we vomit, and I'm like provocatively using this term, we vomit our heart closure and all our talking and taking action from there in front of our wives very often. I did it for years. Guys that I coach, every guy, when I ask them that question, is like, you know, about heart closure and when you speak from there, did it ever work? It's like, no, it never does. Does blaming your woman ever work? No. Does shaming yourself ever work? No. Does stonewalling ever work to create beautiful connection? No. Does any of these things that we repeatedly do work? And it's like, no, it doesn't. But we repeatedly do it. We repeatedly show up and vomit that version, the frantic, fragile 5-year-old that's desperately trying to remain right because why he felt wounded when, you know, his mom criticized his dad used to get super pissed off, so now he doesn't like taking feedback. Or there's going to be, you could have like 100 different, there's going to be 5 or 6 classic versions of wounds, but you would have your own unique imprint of wounds that comes up in conflict moments, that you get this irrational upsurge of immense energy. It feeds your divisive focus on right and wrong that divides you, that puts distance between yourself and your woman. You're blaming her, you're shaming yourself, etc., 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 and the whole thing falls apart. And you end up there for like an hour unnecessarily bashing each other, or 2 hours, or like me in like early, you know, does 10, 12 years, fucking 3 and 4 hours at night. Oh, if I think, looking back, I don't know if any of you have your versions of these super long into the early hours of the morning conversations that just like seem eternal and impossible to end. Oh, you'll understand what I mean by the, oh, man, when I think back. To let you know, this type of focus, why I'm speaking with such passion and directionality on this, I don't have those conversations anymore. Guys I end up coaching, they don't end up having conversations like that anymore. There's the marriage transformation program coming up. It's launching really soon. The guys that will do that will stop having conversations like that anymore. It's impossible when you have a systematic way of going at it. Part, the main foundation, there's no systematic way at navigating conflict in relationship without first putting your entire focus on landing on a runway where as soon as possible, you are going to be smiling, your woman's going to be smiling, you're soft, there's understanding, there's connection. That's crucial. An example of why this, how this works out, I'll give it from my own lived experience. because I don't want any of you to listen in ever. I never want to give the impression that, oh, I have it sorted. When I say I don't have those conversations with my, those type of conversations with my woman anymore, I'm not saying that I just have beautiful, perfect, harmonious conversations with my woman 24/7. On a daily basis, several times a week, we will have intense, intensely challenging, intimate conversations where her wounds have been triggered, my wounds have been triggered, and it's go time. To give you an example, like my queen gets actually, she sort of goes quiet when I say this. She's like, I really don't like you saying that. But I've just got comfortable, like I'm quite unapologetic in my expression of when an emotion comes up, an emotion comes up. Ultimately, she's fine. She just finds it very uncomfortable when I'm dishonest. But one of the emotions that comes up, because from my wounds, it's like my wounded inner child looking at, you know, parental dynamics, etc., etc. One of the deepest shadow emotions that comes up for me when I go into heart closure, and you know, in those first few seconds, or it could be a couple of minutes before I sort of drop in and I catch what's actually happening, there is that window for me always. I'm getting better. You know, the practice is to get better and better, so you instantaneously, sometimes I catch it in the first sentence, maybe a couple of minutes. But one of the predominant emotions that comes up for me is repulsion or disgust. It's like they're very similar. It's like literally in moments, you know, my woman can say something to me and it's like, boom. It's like if I'm after getting, like, she gives like radically direct feedback and it feels like all of a sudden, and for whatever reasons, my nervous system in that time, in that moment is just not receptive to it. I can have still, and this probably will be around for a long time to come, I can have an upsurge of repulsion. Literally in that moment, the emotional charge trying to take over my whole body is I'm feeling repulsed. There's no part of my natural emerging emotional experience that's encouraging me with an impulse to go the far side of the table and, you know, put a connecting hand on my woman's back or hug into her. But because I have this if then, my focus, I just know that no matter what comes up in my heart closure speaking from there does not work. So I have trained my nervous system to go, if it doesn't work, I don't fucking do it. I encourage you to get black and white with yourself on this. There are times when we need to be soft and feminine and loving and accepting of ourselves and all of that. That's part of your healing journey. Cool. Go to a therapist, work with it there. Go to men's work with it there. But there's a time, you know, you've just got to get really clear. And I speak really directly to this because I see tons of guys that have been in men's work for years, but they keep repeating the same pattern. And it's like at some point, you've just got to accept speaking and communicating from heart closure doesn't fucking work. Can we just get black and white in this? You know, speaking when you're blaming your woman, trying to make her wrong and you right, it does nothing positive for your relationship. So my direct challenge to you is just stop it. Commit to stopping it. And why it works for me is when I got black and white within myself and I set if-thens, it's like, if I drop into heart closure, then I shut the fuck up and get into my body. I had to get really direct because these like wounded shadow emotions, I just fucking steamroll her with blame and shame myself. It felt so energizing to just like unleash all this anger. Felt like so fucking temporarily empowering. And like, I like really, like I felt so powerful. Like, if I look at it now, it's like, it's man, that's so small-minded, but that's okay. That's where I was at. Being angry and making somebody else wrong from an inner child perspective can feel really like so sensationally powerful in the moment. That's why it's quite a charged pattern to break. But my encouragement is that your rational mind, your conscious mind can just start reflecting and going, heart closure never works for me. It doesn't work for you, man. It complicates your life and it builds conflict and disconnection in as a pattern. It doesn't break that pattern. It actually feeds it more and more. And ultimately, again, it's life and death, long term for marriage. The more your woman has that experience, she will almost inevitably lose hope at some point. Divorce papers on your table on a Monday morning as you're drinking your coffee, going off to work, or it's just like disconnection, unhappily ever after. She loses hope. None of you have the courage to make a game-breaking change. Both are unnecessary. So hard closure does not work. When I focus on connection, so remember, I'm speaking to context. My nervous system very often has this high charge of repulsion. It's like I just like even my thoughts, I will catch. Part of a symptom of heart closure for me is when I'm thinking, look at her, I don't fucking want. Like part of my thinking will literally be, I don't fucking want to go to the far side of the table. Like I want to, like there's a part of me going, I just fucking go out the door. I need space. But it's like it's a resentful needing space. That's go time for me. I'm like, don't speak from there. Don't communicate from there. Trust none of that is true. It has no absolute truth. I know experientially now at this point. For years, I used to speak from there and react from there and stonewall from there. Now I don't. It's go time. And I know my one priority is connection. The difference that makes, and it works without failure when I practice it, and I underline, when I practice it, the odd time, hey, it takes me a little bit longer, but the majority of time, because my nervous system, I have trained my nervous system, I've journaled on it, I've got coaching, I've reflected on it to the point where it's like, the only thing that will work is bringing, pilot metaphor, bringing my woman as the passenger and me as the pilot, bringing both of us to land in on the runway of connection as soon as possible. My mind, my conscious mind takes over from the reactive subconscious revealing of wounded emotionality. It makes an executive decision from awareness. It's like I have this witnessing awareness of, oh wow, there's heart closure. Oh wow, that's I even in my head I'll be like, okay, that's repulsion. That's the thought patterns of blaming whore, of wanting to fuck off out the door. I physically don't want to go to the far side of the table. That's repulsion. That doesn't work. What this empowers me to do is make a new choice. What happens in that crucial moment when I become aware that I'm in heart closure, I become aware of repulsion, I become aware of the thought patterns that repulsion feeds, I break it by doing what? I make a decision, a sacred choice, to get up off my ass, walk the far side of the table, place a hand on my beloved's shoulder, depending on how much repulsion I like, you know, if it's really high load repulsion, sometimes the only thing that's available to me is a hand on the shoulder. I'll be honest with you, but a hand on the shoulder, and with the most available warmth, as I say, the most that's available, I say, hey, baby, I love you. It's like, we've got whatever argument that's going on now. It's like, let's just connect. It's like, I'm not against you. We've been here before. It's like, I want to talk to you from a connected perspective. It's like, I've got a high load. I've got a charge of repulsion. I've got a charge of this. My mind is all blaming. It's like, nothing is good from there. I don't want to speak to you ever from there. That's not my intention. My intention is to connect with you now. And then, you know, from there, baby, you know, we'll sort it out like we've done hundreds of times already. I mean, within, like, once she sees me coming to the far side of the table, she knows at this point, she's already relaxing. The first few times I did it, like, I took her by surprise because I was never doing it. But within nanoseconds, within 5-10 seconds, then I'll give a hug. Then we'd be laughing about the silliness of the whole argument a lot of the times. There'd be a kiss, a cuddle. She might even give out to me. It's like, ah, you're just like, you know, you just fucking doing your thing again. Like, what the hell do you take that so personally for? And I'm smiling. There's connection again. Once you create connection, everything runs smoother. It's key. Your entire attention needs to be like the pilot coming into landing in a shitty storm or a crosswind. Your focus, your entire nervous system needs to have its attention exclusively on creating connection as the absolute priority. Everything outside of that makes your inner world impossible to bear. It's shitty, it's horrible, and every part of data that you will observe in your woman will tell you the truth of what I'm saying. The right and wrong subconscious intentional focus does not work. It's like the pilot looking to crash land on a shitty side, boring lane, twisty, bended road in the middle of a fucking field with cattle on it, going, hey man, maybe we should land it there. And like, you could crash land, pray to God that you survive, but it's fucking stupid when there's a clear, like, 2 kilometer length of, like, 150 meter wide runway. I don't know what width they are. It's fucking perfect. Aim it for that. Get everybody back home safe. After the pilot lands, going with that metaphor, yes, if there were some learnings along the way, the pilot will debrief after every flight. They'll definitely debrief after, like, you know, a certain incident or something, if there's a learning and potential there. Do the debrief when you're connected and when everybody is safe. That's the encouragement for you. Get yourselves from heart closure. Don't talk from there until you, like, just rapidly prioritize connection. Get to connection. When, if you get this, you know, I just there's times, guys, I have to admit here, there's times when I do question myself. It's like, oh, fuck, Mark, you know, do you get too insistent or too direct? Or, you know, I want to keep it like the right balance of, you know, the guys will get there by themselves, you know, in their own sacred time. There are times when, purely as a result of seeing how, of knowing how much pain and suffering this heart closure, like right and wrong focus, the amount of pain that caused me, the amount of pain and unnecessary suffering that caused my wife, the amount of pain and suffering and trauma that has caused our children, especially our eldest. I've been like 2.5-3 years working with incredible levels of discipline and presence and open-hearted communication with her to support her finding a trauma-informed way out of the amount of trauma she experienced as a result of our arguments growing in her earliest years. The impacts of going from a dysfunctional way, a non-constructive way of communication, where arguments, when they happen, they're shitty and people feel like crap afterwards, to like a conflict avoidance pattern that ends up creating more conflict. Even if the arguments aren't happening, sometimes you can have this, oh, there's a lot of peace, there's a lot of superficial peace, but people are seething underneath it all because they're afraid to speak, because when it goes bad, it goes so ugly that the arguments don't happen. That's just as traumatizing. So I'm just on a topic that hits home really, really close to my heart, in how I've seen it and the amount of grief I had to experience going through and recreating safety for my queen and my kids. I really don't want that reality for you. Whatever reality, whatever communication patterns has been, you know, predominant up to date in your marriage, man, I'm cool with that. I invite you to be loving and accepting of that. We didn't get taught in school, we didn't get it modeled by our dads, by our stepdads, you know, by the elders in our society. Fucking nobody, you know, nobody gave us the playbook of how this can work beautifully. This is what I'm trying my best to provide every, like, as the maximum amount of husbands around the planet with, like, an inner world nervous system awareness and education, like an inner playbook where it's like, you know how to play this one out. You know what the highest leverage place, where the highest leverage place is to focus your attention in conflict. And you know that today. You know it today. Train your nervous system. If you're in heart closure, then you focus all your thinking, all your talking, all your taking action immediately on the priority, number one, of creating connection with your woman. And from there, seek to understand her when you speak a bit more. Understand her perspective a bit more. Get curious. Reflect back to her. Hey, baby, I believe this is what I heard you say. She feels more heard. Then number two, when you speak, well, you've already created a connection and you want to speak a little bit more to it. She's feeling the love, she's feeling the connection. Then, you know, speak number two, priority of speech in high level communication is take extreme ownership. It's like, what am I not taking ownership of here? You know, apologize to her, say, hey, baby, I was like feeling really deep anger, aggressive, you know, repulsion, whatever it was. There was lots of thoughts, you know, what I said there at the beginning, like just a couple of minutes ago or 5 minutes ago, just the last sentence. It's like, that was hurtful. I apologize. I take that back. Didn't mean that. And like, I'm fully present with you now. Own that, builds safety in. And then number three, speak your truth. Speak honestly. You now have a foundation of connection and love and acceptance between you. You've connected. You know, she's going to be feeling safer because you've sought first verbally to seek more understanding, to make sure that you've heard what you think you've heard. You've owned your shit. And hey, then speak your truth. And now you've got the foundation. You're out of conflict. You're into understanding each other and conflict navigation and connection. And you were the one that created all of this. She's going to brag about you. She is going to honor you as the uncommon king among like a globe of boys that have yet to be initiated fully into deep intimate relationships, because you're going to be the one in a billion, the one in, like, you know, several million men that when you experience heart closure, you become self-aware, and then you put your entire attention on connection. She's going to be spellbound by you when you do this and do it. The discipline, discipline is freedom, Jocko Willink style, but when you create the discipline inside of yourself and the fortitude to set that if-then in motion again and again and again, I mean, she's inevitably going to be, like, bragging about you, feeling safe, like melting in your arms and fucking just loving life with you like never before. That's part of the game that we're playing here. So, yeah, coming into landing. I say that very often, and I've just been talking about the metaphor of a pilot coming into landing. To sum it all up, if you experience heart closure, then place all your entire attention on creating connection as soon as possible. There's no other game. Right and wrong doesn't work. Cut that habit. It's a bad, bad habit that we've inherited. It's not bad. It doesn't make us wrong, but it just does not work. So stop going there. Go for connection and live happily ever after. Honoring you, powerful, potent kings, listening in again and again. My absolute expectation that this one episode by itself can transform your entire marriage. Implemented this new awareness with a sincere implementation of the if-then new pre-commitment within your nervous system when you experience heart closure and thus connection with your woman. Your implementation of this, sincere with 100% commitment, can and will transform everything in your marriage. I know it as a fact. It's over to you. It's whether you choose to apply this new wisdom consciously and with heart warriorship in your marriage. It's up to you, man. But I know you are that powerful. Ending with our beautiful foundational mantra of this incredible movement of be the husband she brags about, that we all partake in collectively and play our own unique and sacred role. Our mantra is better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazing kingly day. And if you like the sound of becoming the marriage transforming hero in your relationship, then the new Be the Husband She Brags About Marriage Transformation Program is perfect for you. Within this exciting new addition to the movement, you will learn to master the Be the Husband She Brags About Marriage Mastery System with direct coaching from me and high accountability from other marriage transforming heroes around the planet. It's based on three very simple steps. 1, hack out what is not working in your marriage. 2, implement a proven marriage mastery system that will bring you results in a predictable and consistent manner. And number three, live your have it all happily ever after marriage. It is literally as simple as that. To implement now, sign up to the email list at kingsoffreedom.me. The link is in the podcast episode description. You will get all the details about the marriage transformation program there. You will also get, in a long line of other powerful kings that are enjoying the beautiful transformative effects of it, you will get the free ebook, 15 Simple Habits to Be the Husband She Brags About.